This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
I never thought that I could ever be here before. I never thought I would stand there and sing. It was just an unbelievable moment for me. Unbelievable.
A clip from I Love to Sing. He was singing from the Barber of Seville at the United Nations. Their ability to do this and for you to make this film is actually part of the legacy of what Mandela has left behind now, and this on his 95th birthday. Your thoughts on Mandela's impact on the country?
Well, absolutely. I mean, as Tsele himself, who I was just saying isn't too political, as he realized 1 year ago today, walking past Mandela's picture at the United Nations as he got ready to sing opera on the floor of the General Assembly, he said to me, when I think about the opportunities that I wouldn't have had a few years ago and the opportunities that I do have now, I'm incredibly moved by that experience.
Well, it's a wonderful film. Julie Cohen is director of I Live to Sing, which premieres tonight on PBS 13. Starting tomorrow, you can watch it online, and we'll link to the film at our website, democracynow.org. Thanks very much for being with us, Julie. For those of you in the New York area, tune in tonight at 7 p.m. to Time Warner's New York One channel, where I'll be debating Deputy Mayor Cass Holloway on the mounting problems with the city's $2 billion modernization of its 911 system that I've been investigating for months. That does it for today's program. I'm Juan Gonzalez. Amy Goodman will be back tomorrow. Thanks for joining us for another edition of Democracy Now!
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:02. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge with host Joanne Hardesty. Today's guests are Sharon Gary Smith, Executive Director of McKinsey River Gathering Foundation, and Galena Avidan, retired community activist and former member of the African American Advisory Committee to Portland Police Bureau. We're going to talk about the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom, which took place in Washington, D.C. some 50 years ago.
Slip a bookmark into your paperback and listen to KBOO for interviews with your favorite fiction and nonfiction writers. Between the Covers airs Thursdays from 11 to 11:30 a.m. here on KBOO 90.7 FM.
Good morning, good morning. I'm Joanne Hardesty, and welcome to Voices from the Edge. I am so thrilled to have in the studio with me two of my sheroes from the community. I have Sharon Gary Smith, who is the Executive Director of McKinsey River Gathering Foundation, and I have Galena Avidan, who is a longtime community activist and former member of the Portland Police Advisory Oversight Committee. Welcome both of you to the studio today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joanne.
It is so wonderful to have you ladies here. And as you may have heard Steve say, we have framed this program around acknowledgement of 50 years having passed since the March on Washington, which was at that time the largest march on Washington, D.C. ever. And over 250,000 people participated. And at that time, that was huge. I want to give our listening audience some context, because I realize as I talk to young people that there's just a disconnect from our history. It's as if people don't remember why these things happened over and over and over ago so many years ago. So one of the things that people may be surprised by is the historic March on Washington was really framed around some key issues that African Americans and other people that were concerned about civil rights felt were not being addressed by the government and needed to be addressed in a much more forthright and immediate way. The big issues around the March on Washington were jobs, police brutality, economic opportunity, housing, health care. And as we reflect on 50 years ago, those were the core issues that mobilized communities to organize and take their issues to the federal government. As we prepare now to celebrate the 50th anniversary, I couldn't help but be struck by the top core issues of 2013 are exactly the same. And I know that there are going to be a lot of activities going on in D.C. as well as here locally. And so I want to immediately say that Portland is organizing its own celebration and recognition of the 50th March, the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington. And that will be held on Saturday, August 24th at Waterfront Park. And people will start gathering at 10 a.m., I believe. There will be more information forthcoming, but keep that date in mind. Now, the historic march in Washington, D.C. will take place on the 28th, which is the exact day that the march took place 50 years ago. So in light of the U.S. Supreme Court's recent decision around the Voting Rights Act and striking down Section 4 of the Voting Rights Act, based on the recent acquittal of Zimmerman and the trial on killing an unarmed teenager, Trayvon Martin, it seemed to be an excellent time to kind of reflect on where we are as a nation and where we're headed. Are we making progress, or have we just eluded ourselves into believing that somehow we've moved further along than we really have? And so that's kind of the frame for the conversation today. Listening audience, if you want to join us, give us a call at 503-231-8187. Who would like to, like, jump in? I gave you a lot to chew on, so.
Yes, you did. Well, as I was thinking about the upcoming 50th anniversary, of course, I had to go back to the original. And at that time, I was 22 years old and very excited about what was happening because, of course, we didn't have the mass media that we had now. But to think that so many people were being affected and everyone wanted to participate is astounding. I was on my way to that march when I got a phone call that my dad had had a heart attack. So I was not able to go, and I detoured and came to Portland to deal with that. But the excitement of what it meant was not lost on me. In doing a little bit of research and understanding that the March on Washington movement actually started in 1941 and lasted to 1946, and that was put together by A. Philip Randolph and Baynard Rustin. The idea was to bring some issues forward. And the March on Washington was used sort of as a stick on the federal government to get some things done. But despite the name of the March on Washington movement, it didn't lead to an actual march because during that period, because Randolph's requests were met before one could be organized. And so from there, it was picked up and moved on with Martin Luther King and many, many others to be what we historically know as the March on Washington of 1963.
And we haven't even gotten into the I Have a Dream speech, but that's a one piece of a very big puzzle. Sharon?
Well, I think if I brought it to back home, if you will, to Oregon, oftentimes a lot of these issues and the struggles people see them as that someplace at a distance.
Yes.
In the case of the march, it was in Washington, D.C., but it actually, that was the anchor place. Mm-hmm. That was the gathering place. Mm-hmm. And then we all were to go back home mm-hmm. and fight for these rights, mm-hmm. fight to improve the systems
exactly.
that were disempowering so mm-hmm. many of us.
Mm-hmm.
So when I think about Oregon and I think about, you said Trayvon Martin mm-hmm. and Zimmerman. Mm-hmm. That happened in Florida, and people say that was Florida.
Mm-hmm.
The striking down of the Voting Rights Act, 65 Voting Rights Act, that happened by our Supreme Court. And, of course, I often say the once. The fact that that happened to disenfranchise people mm-hmm. who are American citizens, mm-hmm. who have fought, who have resisted the oppression, the brutality, the educational limitations that were placed on us, mm-hmm. the poor housing, the health care. And then to think about 2014, we're going to have affordable health care. All of these things, it might seem like a very sad and pitiful journey.
Mm-hmm.
We know that there have been some successes, but Portland, Oregon has had a story of police either indifference or racial profiling that has led to a very disproportionate number of African-American men and women who have suffered. So it's sometimes hard to balance when we look at housing, we look at health care, we look at the racism that is at the foundation of systems.
Mm-hmm.
It's often hard to balance the joyful progress because it's a long journey to justice.
Right.
And so I want to keep reminding us in Oregon that social and racial and economic and environmental justice is not just us.
Mm. That's a really good point. One of my dear friends, Dr. Leroy Haynes, says that this is not a sprint. It's a marathon.
Indeed.
And he reminds us of that whenever we are just like, it's got to happen now. When you say 50 years, I mean, so in 50 years, we've had political leadership come and go. We've had scandals. We've had, how many presidents. When you look at the outcomes, especially as it relates to the African-American population, you can't help but be disappointed that 50 years later, equity-wise, we have less, it appears, as far as a community, as a collective community, than we did 50 years ago.
That is absolutely correct.
And so how'd that happen? Because we were paying attention.
I think the fact that so many rights, when you talk about civil rights and the civil rights movement, it literally was the foundation for so many other movements.
Yes.
Even the practice of suffering and struggle and having a long view of things, people being willing to sacrifice for us, mm-hmm. their children, and those children's children, mm-hmm. that they didn't think it was going to be over soon, but they ask how long?
Right.
How long?
Right.
And to think that all of these rights that have been so fiercely fought for mm-hmm. are eroding.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, many forget about the unity of building a movement that includes all of us
mm-hmm.
because we've been on the line so long
mm-hmm.
for everything that's hard won has been a struggle. So we're not a people adverse to struggle.
Right.
But it's the idea of actually being able to hold, for me, the sadness and the disappointment at times.
Mm-hmm.
I'm old enough to really be able to remember when we started doing this. I know Glenn and I, we didn't know we had any choices probably, because
right.
that's what our folks did,
right.
is that you make the road you walk on.
That's right.
And then to think that people don't see the unity, or one victory becomes where we dance,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to this longer view that we all deserve justice and equity and having a sense of being respected
mm-hmm.
and holding others accountable for the rights that we deserve.
I totally agree with that, Sharon. And in addition, as we speak of racism, I think we also have to talk about classism in this country and have people to understand, I hope they're understanding, that if you think that classism is just something that affects people of color, you better think again. I think it is being used decisively to put a wedge. I mean, there's always been something there, but to now in particular, I'm seeing it, especially here in Portland, Oregon. I'm seeing a wedge being placed here. So people won't understand that we have a problem with class, that things are being set into motion. I did have a brief moment of happiness and clarity when I went to Peninsula Park for the Zimmerman demonstration, verdict demonstration. Mm-hmm. I saw a lot of young whites there and some older, mm-hmm. which tells me there are some thinking people in this Portland community. Mm-hmm. But it needs to be much, much larger and much, much wider so we can understand what's really, really happening here.
I think we've got a lot to talk about and not a lot of time to do it in, but what a problem to have. We've got a couple of callers that are waiting. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. We're going to go to the phone line. Hello, Joanne. Welcome to KBOO.
Yeah, hello. I've been struggling with some things lately. I'm sorry. Within myself about when I listen to people anymore, the experts and the people that are supposed to have the real information, I've been thinking, are they really telling me the truth? Are they really telling me everything? And so this morning I was listening to Democracy Now, and I guess because of that state, one of those states I've been in lately, about life and people, I wasn't listening carefully to Democracy Now about Mandela and apartheid, but I did pay some attention. I wondered, is apartheid really gone in South Africa? And then I thought, apartheid, oh, I'm going to cry. Do I really know what apartheid is? But anyway, thank you for listening and goodbye.
Thank you for the call, Joanne. Yes, apartheid is gone in South Africa, but not in the U.S. of A. But that's another conversation.
I think if you look at housing, healthcare, access, equal participation, if
jobs.
You look at education and jobs and workforce, if you look at community capacity, mm-hmm. the structures and systems that encourage mm-hmm. healthy communities without gentrification, mm-hmm. then I think that we're talking about a form of apartheid, keeping apart, separate, based mm-hmm. on race, class, color.
Right. What's interesting about the comparison to apartheid is once the decision was made to dismantle apartheid, the Constitution now is inclusive of every color, every race within South Africa. We couldn't even get there. We didn't even start there. Not that they don't have their own problems and still a lot of poverty. We haven't, you know, we have lots of callers lined up, so we're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Brian. Welcome to KBOO.
Hey, Joanne. How are you doing?
I'm doing excellent. How about you?
Good. So, you know, my comment is pretty much slanted on what happened with the Trayvon Martin case. Though I don't think we need to discuss it, it's another shining example, unfortunately, of how crazy and how backward we are becoming. And I think, you know, from, you know, Martin Luther King, you know, and the March on Washington, and the end of apartheid is a good subject because, you know, we are progressing into apartheid, a deeper apartheid than we've ever been. And it's now, and, you know, unfortunately, and I'm not trying to discourage anybody because, you know, I'll stay left-wing until I'm pushing up daisies.
And, you know. Yeah, you and me both.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, at some point we either have to decide, you know, we're going to have a win here or we're going to just accept the fact that we are and look at it. I mean, you know, look at it. We are losing. And you know, I mean, And it's all on paradox. You know, we have the first, I mean, it was a astonishing political race in 2008.
Right.
You know, we had our first black president. And what's he doing? He's instituting the surveillance state.
Right.
You know, what's going on here? I mean, right. You know, like, so, and the whole joke is on us is, and sorry for the lecture, Joanne, but we're paying for it. You know, we are paying for it financially. And the thing is, as we go down further down this road, we have less moral authority. We have less authority anywhere on the globe. We're being kicked out of every country that doesn't want us. And we're just a big, stupid bully if you look at us. And the technology is there, Joanne. You know, we know now that there is no difference between the races, that we're all equal. And we didn't know that 50 years ago. There was still some science saying
I knew it.
Yeah, what's that?
One of my guests said she knew it.
Sure, you knew it. Absolutely. But, you know, there was still some science out there telling, you know, vulnerable people that there wasn't. But we all know it now.
Well, even today, you can find studies that try to divide populations. And and one of the things that I hope we don't do today is depress the populace, right?
Well, I mean, how can you? But see, Joanne, my question is this: is at this point in the left wing, how could we not be depressed? I mean, how? And you know what? Depression isn't always a bad thing. You know, I mean, depression can be a thing about self-evaluation. Mm-hmm. And I'll stop.
We really appreciate your call today. Thank you for your call.
Okay, thanks.
I think the idea about being depressed and disappointed, mm-hmm. I see them as differently.
That, right.
And perhaps as a little girl, my mother taught me that there are a whole lot of lessons that are learned in a loss, mm-hmm. and you apply them to the next move so that you have a victory.
Mm-hmm.
And we have had some victories mm-hmm. here in Oregon. We have tuition equity. 10 years. We had the Department of Justice, which you, of course, Joanne, very active and instrumental in the whole idea of checking the behavior of those who are sworn to protect.
But let me stop you there, Sharon.
We got a long way to go with that,
of course.
Because
I got to say, tuition equity is a great example. We have had Democratic leadership in this state
absolutely
for a very, very long time. Why does it take 10 years for a majority of the House and Senate to figure out that it benefits the state to educate all of our kids rather than separating them
and trying to figure out which kids are deserving,
right? And we're doing the same with healthcare, right? Because what we don't talk about in healthcare reform is that it doesn't include immigrant kids. If mm-hmm. kids are undocumented, they are not getting healthcare, right? And so we've created this illusion that January 2014 everybody will have healthcare. No, people will be required to have a healthcare card. Right? That has nothing to do with seeing a healthcare provider. And so there will be a rude awakening in January of 2014 around that particular piece. But that's the thing I'm told all the time, I need to be more patient. Right. I want things to happen too quickly. Right. I'm too, you know, I have too much emotion attached to the things that I care about. But I'm getting old. I'm not going to be here a whole lot more years. And it's frustrating to me to live in a place that pats itself on the back about being progressive, that has the most racist practices that are part of the institutions. And so, and I hope people are hearing, I am not calling people racist. I am saying that the institutions that they control have created a structure whereby race has played a predominant role in the creation of those structures.
I absolutely agree with that, because what ends up happening is, as you go through this battle, mm-hmm. and you think, well, we're coming to some progression, mm-hmm. but when you look, and I'll take it back to 50-year celebration, we're not dealing with individuals; mm-hmm. we are dealing with institutions.
Yes,
and so you can vote someone out, mm-hmm. you can wait for them to die,
right?
But what has been set in place
right.
stays in place. So we have to look at how do we address institutions? How do we make those changes?
Right.
And just one other comment I want to make, that last caller that called in, he was speaking about Obama and President Obama and some of the things that are happening. And yes, indeed, he's correct. But there seems to be some kind of fairy tale fallacy mentality going on in this country that thinks Barack Obama actually is running something. I mean, there hasn't been a president that was ever elected that actually ran something. This is bigger than that, people. Let's not be naive. So the program of putting him into place, I'll just sort of back off that a little bit. But understanding that things happen the way they're supposed to happen, and we just have to be aware of what is happening and then mount to deal with it. This is where all the people come into perspective. So don't look at me and say my president, because I could have been looking for the last 300 years or so and say your president. So and people don't feel that they've been responsible for the decisions that have been made by Jefferson, Washington, Clinton, et cetera, et cetera. So I'll just let that rest.
On that note, we're going to go back to the phone line. We got callers stacked up. Hello, Franny. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm going to try to be brief, but there's so much that's running through my mind as I'm listening to you and your guests speak. One thing I'd love to see in Oregon is the equivalent of Moral Mondays, like what they're having in North Carolina. If we had something called Moral Mondays or called something else that was achieving the same, I don't know.
So I'm sorry, I'm not, achieving. Hello, I'm not familiar with the term, ma'am. Would you tell me what Moral Mondays, what does that encompass?
Oh, okay. So Moral Mondays is every Monday a group goes down to the Capitol building, I think, in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And they protest everything that could be construed as immoral, such as the healthcare system, gay rights, civil rights, women's rights, anything.
Okay.
Anything and everything, and they bring together people from disparate backgrounds.
That sounds like
black,
a good.
Black, white, gay. It's great. I mean, it addresses fundamentally, I think, the main issue, which one of your guests brought up, which is that this is a class war that we're dealing with here. You know, the basis of what's happening is economic, and so that's sort of their perspective, I guess. It's just,
you know, I didn't disagree with my guest when she said that, you know, that class was a piece of it, because I believe, and as me, Joanne Hardesty, believe that race is always the number one issue, because as a country, we have never, ever, ever addressed race. I can't tell you how many times I'm in a conversation about race and I'll say something and then count to five. And the first person to respond will say, well, no, it's really an economic issue. Well, no, it's really about class. And it really isn't. It really is about race, because everything, I mean, if you add the economic piece, then you exacerbate the race piece. But the race piece covers pretty much everything in this country. So I just respectfully disagree that it's the fact that the economic collapse has taken place means that many more people are now suffering the repercussions of what's happening in the broader community.
Right. Well, and don't get me wrong, and I don't mean to, you know, to simplify it. I do think that race is a huge issue, and it is its own issue.
Yes.
However, there's a divide and conquer mentality amongst the people who control everything, which are the corporations, which, you know, are the very wealthy. And that brings me to my next point, which is we as a people do, I think we feel powerless, but actually we have a ton of power. We just haven't exercised it. And one of the ways that we can exercise it is a very old thing and something that people did during the civil rights movement, which is to boycott. We can all stop supporting the people who are oppressing us, which are the corporations. That's very powerful, a very powerful tool that we can use, and we don't use it enough.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate your call.
Thank you.
And have a great day and keep the advocacy going. For those of you who have just tuned in, I am speaking with Sharon Gary Smith. She is the executive director of MRG Foundation. And if you're not familiar with MRG Foundation, you should be. Go online and look them up. And actually, my Facebook page has a link, and feel free to look them up there. And we also have Galena Avalon, and she has been, she is a Avedon. And she is a retired community activist, but also formerly with the African American Police Advisory Committee. And we are so thrilled to have them in the studio. We are talking about preparing for the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington and how that relates to some recent activity that's taken place, including the U.S. Supreme Court's gutting of Section 4 of the Voting Rights Act and the recent verdict on Zimmerman's trial for the death, for the killing of Trayvon Martin. And we have several callers on the line. If you'd like to join us, give us a call at 503-231-8187. Hello, John. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning, Joanne. How are you doing today?
I am excellent. How about you?
I'm trying to adjust my pillows at my low coffee table so I can have tea, write in my journal, pay attention, write things down as quickly as I can, and be comfortable.
Well, good. I hope you've accomplished all those tasks. Do you have a question or a comment for our guests?
I don't even know where to start. The story of Trayvon Martin, that's new to me. But I think the reoccurring story is not new at all. Was this a young man that spoke out or was standing up?
This was a young man that went to the store for Skittles one evening. Skittles. Candy and tea. Neighborhood watchman said, you know, looked kind of suspicious, started following them. Next thing you know, he was shot and killed. That's the short version.
And he was a young black man.
Young black
which
man.
Which is unarmed. Part of the continuing story.
Right.
18, 24. 17. Young is a,
17.
Is a perspective.
Yeah, well, he was 17.
I have to
ask, John, where have you been? You must be the only person on this planet that does not know about this trial.
Well, I have a TBI, so I forget things, and I have to hear them over and over and over again.
Mm.
I remember the story. Like, I may not remember
the details. I understand. Details. So let's get to your point.
That's my point. History is very important. The act of telling these stories, and I understand that because it's very important to me in how my everyday life functions. And we don't forget these things, we do forget these things, and then the lesson has to be relearned. Unfortunately, it has to be relearned. And I wish that wasn't the case. When things like this happen, when people forget the past, or they forget, they don't listen to their elders, or they don't listen to the old man on the rocking chair that just sits there and dispenses his wisdom in the form of stories that seem to go nowhere. When these things aren't paid attention to, we repeat ourselves, and it's tragic. And then young people or old people suffer, and the repercussions of said suffering brings about more suffering and more anger. And the patience that you talk about, Joanne, you said that often people tell you to be more patient,
right.
And that you're chomping at the bit to get your point across.
Right.
And when things like this happen that we feel passionately about, we don't act with calm and with patience and with breath and with love. It's a knee-jerk reaction.
I can tell you just the instinctively that there is a place for thought and for thoughtfulness when acts that appear through my African American lens, to be deliberate and continuous and strike at the heart of who matters, who counts, who's disposable in America. While I want some thoughtful deliberation, I want to be able to call the question of why is it, in fact, a society that needs to remember what racism and racial profiling and assuming someone to have no value because of their color or of their race or of their sexual identity, that if those are the patterns of unknowing, then there's something greater to me than just forgetting incidents or forgetting history, that our history as African Americans, the history as of women in this country, the history of fighting for liberation based on who you love or who you should be allowed to love, is a long enough one that we do act and we can act, and we have to act together to recognize your destiny, as Dr. King said, is bound up in mine. So Trayvon, there are Portland losses, Keaton Otis, there's Aaron Campbell, there was Kendra James. There is a long list, and those that I'm missing, that tell us it's more than just not remembering. It is failing to recognize and name the kind of assumptions and societal embedding of racism that allows some people to be losses that we could accept. And I say none of them. And I think that our community's ability to act has been demonstrated in a number of ways. We rise up. We fight back. Galena talked about the rally. Trayvon is the latest rally. But I also want to see proactive movement that includes whites, other people of color, people from various socioeconomic classes, because we all stand to gain. Or if I love the phrase, if they come for you in the night, they'll come for me in the morning.
That's right.
John, that's what I want us to do, is to be proactive, to use the memory, but to not get stuck in what we don't recall or don't remember,
right,
because we have a long history of these memories.
That's absolutely true. John, did you make your point?
Oh, I think she made it for me.
Thank you.
One other, there's a story that a medical professor tells over and over again about young doctors, and it's the question of abortion, and he lists all these qualities, disabilities of children. If you knew the child was going to be missing this sense, if you knew the child was going to be deformed, if you knew the child was going to be disabled, would you abort? And many of the kids, I call them kids, the young doctors in training in the class said, oh, absolutely, absolutely, we would abort this birth. And the instructor says, congratulations, you just killed Beethoven.
Wow.
So not being able to see the worth, and perhaps the things that you do see, the struggles with that hardship, that the things that represent the things that can be seen. I had a wonderful weekend at the fair, at the Oregon Country Fair, and my favorite conversation, although I talked to many, many people.
John, I'm sorry.
My
we're
favorite
gonna,
conversation
okay, real quick.
Was with a blind man.
Hmm.
And he was there to look at the paintings.
Have a good day, John.
It's fabulous.
That is absolutely fabulous. I want to take a moment and remind you that Portlanders are, in fact, paying attention to what's happening nationally. On Saturday, there will be there's a National Day of Action call, and in Portland, there will be a march and rally this Saturday, July 20th at 2 p.m. at the Hatfield Federal Courthouse on Southwest 3rd and Main. This is part of the National Day of Action that's happening at the national level. And we're encouraging people to come out and bear witness. One of the requests for this National Day of Action is to put pressure on the federal government to do conduct an investigation of Zimmerman, because as we know, we have a history in this country of acquitting people for killing African Americans, and there used to be a time that when the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division came to town, it meant that someone was going to be held accountable. It's not my parents' civil rights division, but it's what we've got. And so that's coming up on this Saturday. Sharon's event is coming up on the 30th of July. July 30th, at what time?
It'll start registration at 5:30. It'll be from 6 to probably 8:30 at Maranatha Church, Northeast 12th and Skidmore. This is the community conversation. We can really talk about what was the impact of the Voting Rights Act rejection of key components. What is the message beyond Trayvon and in honor of Trayvon and all the other losses? And what can we do? People feel like we can't do anything.
Right.
What can we do besides conversation? It's conversation with action, personal action.
Right.
July 30th, Tuesday at Maranatha. Come one, come all for a conversation that moves to action.
Wonderful. And then I want to remind folks that because it is the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington, there is a organizing meeting, in fact, this evening, today, the 18th of July, at 6:30 at Allen Temple Church. Organizations and individuals who want to help plan the local march and rally for August 24th are encouraged and invited to come and participate in helping to make sure that the march, the 50th anniversary celebration, is big and inclusive and representative of all the issues that we care about.
Is that Allen Temple on 8th and Skidmore?
8th and Skidmore.
Right off of Fremont.
That is
off of 7th Avenue.
Right
yes.
out off of 7th, right. yes. And for our listening audience, let me tell you what's coming up today on KBOO at 9. Press Watch is off. Instead, Ani Haynes hosts an interview with Stuart Perrin, author and activist working to stop sex trafficking. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, the topic is Chinese and Western law. At 10 is Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 on Flashpoint, law professor Marjorie Cohen talks about forbidding the mention of racial profiling in the George Zimmerman trial. And a former Black Panther talks about the extreme racism that surrounds the case. At 11 on Between the Covers, the guest is mystery writer Craig Johnson, author of Walter Longmire Mystery Series. At 11:30, Dan Johnson speaks with local poet Andrea Hollander about her latest book, Landscape with Female Figure. And want to take this opportunity to thank KBOO members for your generous support. And if you're not a member yet, just go to kboo.fm and click the tip jar, and it's that simple to become a member and join us. And we're going to go back to the phone lines because the lines are just all lit up. Hello, Michael. Welcome to KBOO.
Hey, Joanne. How you doing?
Hey, Michael. Long time no hear from. How are you?
I'm doing okay.
Good.
So, you know, one of the things that, first of all, that personally I disagree with is what that last guy said. I don't think that first of all, nobody's going to ever give up power or treat you right based on polite conversations and based on being nice. I mean, the struggle we are in ain't based on nice.
That's right. What did who was that? Frederick Douglass that said, power cedes nothing without a demand. It never has. It never will.
That's a true fact. And he also said that find out what somebody a group of people will quietly submit to, and then you know the extent of your domination.
Yep.
So, you know, basically, you know, the people that came before us, they were willing to go to jail. They was willing to get beat up. They were willing to everything to fight for their freedom. And so
it was
a social unrest that once it stopped being covert and became overt and the whole world saw it. See, what we need to do, and I think what Black people are forgetting, we need to get the whole world in on our struggle because it's a world struggle.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you can't, and the world is looking at us because we're right here because these same racist people, man, they're not only dogging us, man, they're dogging people all over, of color all over the world. And so one thing that we need to do is we need to have, especially here in America, because what really I think upsets me a lot of time is we have a lot of minorities that have just showed up in America recently, you know, Hispanics and stuff like that, and they're enjoying a lot of benefits and civil rights that we fought for. And they ain't even got to lift a finger. They just get it. And so we need to embrace them. We need to get them in our struggle. And then we need to go after these people.
So, Michael, you know, whenever you call, and I love when you call, I agree with 90% of what you say, and then you say something that I have to disagree with. And so
what was that?
The 90%. The only part that I disagree with was the about recent immigrants. You know, there's a reason why people immigrate here, and it's the same reason that people have always immigrated here, and it's for economic opportunity, and it's to be able to feed their kids, right? And so, but we have
I'm not disagreeing with that. Michael, hang on for a sec.
My only point is that it's U.S. foreign policy that drives immigration. And so I just don't want you to blame the immigrants that we messed up their country. They came here, and now I just don't want to leave that out there.
That wasn't my point.
All right. Okay.
My point was...
Then we're cool.
A lot of, especially people from south of the border, a lot of people of color that come here as immigrants...
Right.
Enjoy a lot of civil rights and freedoms that we fought for. That's what I'm saying, and that is a true fact. And they didn't have to struggle like that. And I'm just saying that's my point right there. So I wasn't talking about what you were talking about in terms of why they come here.
I understand, Michael, but I just hate when we leave that out there because just like race, we don't have an open and honest conversation about race in the United States. We certainly don't have an open and honest conversation about immigration, right? So I just didn't want to leave that sitting out there. But I appreciate your point, and you're absolutely right, is people were willing to die for what they believed in during the civil rights struggle. And if that meant they were going to be beat up, that they were going to be water hosed, that the dogs were going to be turned on them, that they were going to lose their job, that they were going to lose their house, they were willing to put everything on the line. And we have so-called activists today, you know, we call them a SOFA activist, right? That, you know, they'll every once in a while email a letter of complaint to the editorial pages of the paper. But when it comes to putting it on the line, we don't have too many people who are willing to put it all on the line for justice today. And I think that might be part of our problem. Thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
Have a great day. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Either of my guests want to jump in. I know our callers have been like all over the place. Okay. Welcome, James. Hello. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Blacks in America were never actually freed. And I know that you guys can probably understand that, but a lot of white folks don't. And what the deal was is that international slave traders who brought you here on ships through the Bank of England, they usurped our central government from the top. And now they are enslaving all of us. What they do is they take and create factions through regulatory policy by the central authority, and then they pit those factions against each other. You got to go back and read Thomas Jefferson and James Madison. This is how the monarchy, this is how the oligarchs have always done it. They divide, they pit people against each other, and they conquer and they enslave. And that is what's happening to this country.
Thank you for your call. Have a great day.
Well, I'm sorry the caller got off. I was just wanting to ask him. I'd be interested to know what he's doing to help move this forward. He has all of that knowledge, all historical information. What is he doing in this day and time to help correct that?
What we have is a total lack of education in this country. I think we could all agree to that. You know, I remember what I learned about black leadership. I didn't learn through a public education system. I learned through a public library system that was accessible. And Enid Pratt Library in Baltimore, Maryland was my second home. So it's interesting as you talk to young people today and you talk to people who think they have a sense of history, there's a lot of disconnects. And so I just didn't want to get into a debate with him because we've got several callers on the line, and I want to take the callers and give both of you an opportunity to kind of some reflections and kind of next steps and remind people about all the activity that's coming up. Because I think one of the things we didn't say today is that almost 1,000 people showed up last Saturday, the day after the verdict in the Trayvon Martin case. I think that that's significant.
It
in
is.
A white liberal community, for less than 24 hours notice to get almost 1,000 people to be on the street to say, this is not okay. I think that was pretty significant. So back to the phone line. Hello, Marie. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning. Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning.
Three short points. Number one, speaking out for a 17-year-old, I'm applying for a job as a youth minister, and I think many people do not understand how youth feel. It actually doesn't matter the color, but especially if they are a minority, what they go through in a 17-year-old. And to me, that court wasn't even fair because he was underage. It should have been a special situation for someone underage. And it's the verdict was just so shocking. And especially, I want to say, for parents who have teenagers, how their hearts must anguish worrying about their underage kids. So that's my
right.
first point. And then two more real quick and I'll
real
get
quick.
Off air.
Okay.
But one is in praise of KBOO. KBOO has educated me so much about the black issues. I've learned so much from Hard Knock Radio in the evenings.
Mm-hmm.
I've learned so much stuff out of Oakland. I'm thrilled to get an education in social justice.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last point, I'm so grateful to hear about the leadership training you mentioned. And in our Hood River area, they're going to have leadership training. It actually is a different minority. It is for the immigration issue. And it's done by CAUSA, C-A-U-S-A, which means cause. And that's going to be this month in July, a one-day class for leadership training. And I agree that all minorities, especially women, need and deserve the finest in leadership training. And it's time for women's voices to be giving leadership to this planet, especially speaking out for our tender youth.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. You did an excellent job of getting your 3 points in a minute's time. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Appreciate your call. Next caller. Hello, Pia. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi, yes. Joanne, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
One of the things I wanted to point out that you said a few callers back when you got off the call with Michael is that one of the biggest things that the people in civil rights, in the civil rights movement, were able to do that we're not able to do now, especially as black people in this country, is put our lives on the line.
Mm-hmm.
For the bigger picture.
Mm-hmm.
And the bigger picture, in my opinion, really, is that black people are still struggling to, you know, when you put aside racism and things like that, one of the biggest things that black people are having a bigger issue is being able to be economically and politically to move ahead. We're not doing that. And because of that, I feel like we're not respected. So it's easy to shoot a black boy in Florida, shoot him down in the street, and people, you know, have compassion for it, but really can't respect why we're so angry and mm-hmm. why we're so mad about that.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're not respected. And we're not respected because we don't understand racial politics and we don't understand what it means to aggregate wealth and how to have racial cohesion.
Mm-hmm.
We're forgetting that. We're so wanting to be loved and be accepted by white and non-white people that we forget that, wait a minute, all these other people, all these other groups of people, white and non-white, are pulling together to make their race move ahead, while we're steadily talking about kumbaya, love me, let's do a multiracial rationale. That's not working for us. It's not. It didn't work in the civil rights era. The only thing that we've been able to make progress now is to is socialize. But other than, you know, economics, being economically sound, in order to be politically, to practice correct racial politics. Mm-hmm. We're not doing that. This Trayvon Martin thing that happened, we really, really, really need to use this as a wake-up call. It's no longer about multiracial and let's love everybody, kumbaya. That needs to be a dead. We are beating a dead horse when we do that. We've got to learn how to take care of ourselves, and then we can be respected. And then when we're respected, and we have the right political power, and we have the right political economics, we can fight against racism. But as long as we're playing to the kumbaya way of living, we're not going to make it. And that's what I have to say.
Thank you so much for your call. I really appreciate you calling in today. I can feel the passion in your voice. And I think there's some truth to some of the things that you said. I certainly believe that the more we as a people can share and work together on the issues that we have in common, the better off we're going to be. No question about that. And clearly, we have to do a much better job of connecting generations, because what it's amazing how little connection, unless it's your own family, we have across generations nowadays. One of the things that in the 60s, you had, you know, 2 to 3 generations living together and working together and supporting each other through the process. So did you want to add something or...
Yeah, I did. I'm thinking as I listen to her that we live in a circular world, and what she's talking about are things that are continually being addressed. Mm. I'm 72 years old, and there were not a lot of books and things that talked about our history, mm-hmm. and so you had to get that orally.
Mm-hmm.
They just weren't there.
Right.
No, these things weren't taught in school. All of the things that are occurring now, where we have this multiracial conglomerate of people, or I should say post-racial.
Let's not pretend about post-racial.
Yeah, it doesn't exist.
Yeah, it doesn't exist.
That's what I wanted to say. Yeah, it doesn't exist. Yeah, right. So that's part of the problem. Okay, so I'm going to let Sharon say something on that.
If you want to go to a caller.
I would love to try to squeak in one or two more callers. If Hello, Jennifer, can you be short, sweet, and to the point?
I hope so.
Me
I
too.
I agree with Pia and a few of the other callers that have called in as a Caucasian woman in my late 50s. I don't see the progression, and it's frustrating to me because I was raised that we were supposed to be human beings and we should treat each other as such.
Right.
But it's unfortunate in this day and age that none of that is happening. And we need to act, and we need to act now. We can't continue to sit by and hope that something's going to happen. And the only way that, I mean, this Trayvon Martin issue has angered me to the point where I can't even speak because I'm so frustrated. I'm married to a person of color, and I witness racism on a daily basis. And it just angers me and frustrates me that at this time that we have digressed instead of progressed.
I agree, ma'am, but I'm going to have to cut you off because I'm running out of time, and they will give me the hook in 30 seconds. Thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
Have a fabulous, fabulous day.
You too.
I just want to make a quick plug. In fact, it would be for Mackenzie River Gathering Foundation and for the Foundation of Racial, Social, Economic, and Environmental Justice Seekers out there. There are a lot of places where people are creating community to fight back against the disempowerment of so many of us, and particularly the experience of African Americans in Portland, Oregon.
I want to make sure we give people the dates. So this Saturday at the Federal Courthouse at 2 p.m., July 30th at Maranatha Church with MRG Foundation, a community dialogue and conversation.
And some
August
action.
24th will be the Portland March. that will commemorate the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington. I am Joanne Hardesty, your fabulous host, and I will be back next week, same time, same place, same station. Have a fabulous day.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. Is that all that glitter is gold? After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on,
get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
And good morning. You're listening to The Mighty Boo. We are KBOO Portland. It is 9 o'clock, and in just a bit, Press Watch is off today. Instead today, Ani Haynes hosts an interview with Stuart Perrin, author and activist working to stop sex trafficking. And then at 9:30 this morning on Fight the Empire, Per Fogarang hosts a discussion of Chinese and Western law with guest Temu Ruskola, author of Legal Orientalism. At 10 today, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, law professor Marjorie Cohn talks about forbidding the mention of racial profiling in the George Zimmerman trial. And former Black Panther Kilu Niasha talks about Trayvon Martin and the extreme racism that surrounds the case. At 11 today on Between the Covers, host Gene Bradley speaks with mystery writer Craig Johnson about his latest book in the Walt Longmire mystery series, A Serpent's Tooth. And at 11:30, Dan Johnson speaks with poet Andrea Hollander, recipient of a 2013 Oregon Literary Fellowship, about her latest book, Landscape with Female Figure, a collection of selected poems. Once again, Press Watch is off today. Stay tuned for Ani Haynes hosting an interview with Stuart Perrin, author and activist working to stop sex trafficking. And that's coming up next on KBOO.